just leave your darling mama, good dear mama too. Lean back and stay a while, mama, good dear mama too. My
That's right, this is Monitor, and I'm your host, Brad Crandall. And coming up in this half hour, the new Christy Minstrels, Edgar Bergen's beautiful daughter, Candace, and Dean Martin's beautiful daughter, Gail. And to start things off, a trumpet-playing Latin gentleman named Herb Alpert, leading the Tijuana Brass through a few hairpin turns in his latest, the exciting Mexican Road Race. Candace Bergen has now emerged from her father's shadow to become a successful young actress in her own right. In addition to talent and beauty, Miss Bergen also has a mind of her own, as reporter John Cannon found out when he interviewed her in Paris.
Candace, how do you like Paris this time? You're here for a little while.
Well, this time I love it. I think that when I was here before, I was 11, and I couldn't even open the door of a taxi. And then I was here when I was 14, and I came off and on for vacations at school. But I wasn't old enough to do anything. You know, everything was interdit and everything was forbidden. So I really couldn't have that good a time. And now that I'm here, well, everything's open to me. And it's become a wonderful experience. And I'm very much at home here.
New York and Paris. Great difference between the two towns?
Well, it depends what echelon you're in. No, if you're in the kind of cafe society, there's no difference at all in any city, any big city. I mean, you know, a discotheque in New York is like being at Castells and New Jimmy's. Actually, there's a tremendous difference. I don't quite know how to describe it. I think that New York has a raw American power, a terribly raw scientific power. And Paris I adore because architecturally it staggers me. And I was, being a history of art major, I'm still very impressed by that.
This is a subject that's a little delicate in a sense that you have a career that stands on its own in every way, but I think it would be silly not to talk
I
about
hear
your
father, of my father.
When talking to you.
Well,
because
I think it's
loved
rude
him
not
in the
to
country.
Talk about
yes,
it.
That's right. We have loved him in America for so many years. Your father, in his professional appearances, has always had so much polish and such a gentleman. Now, I ask, is that the real Mr. Bergen?
Oh, yes. I don't think it's very easy to pretend being a gentleman. Certainly, there are lapses, you know, in this kind of polish. And my father, that's one reason I love him very, very much. Not because he's my father and because I love him as a man, but he's a tremendous gentleman, and he's one of the few people I know in show business, and I'm afraid I've been exposed to it much more so than I'd like to have been. He's one of the few people who really has an enormous amount of integrity. He's a great man as well as being a great performer.
Well, in this sense, he must be a very fine father because he has raised you, that is, he and your mother, so that you have a great independence, but still a strong family feeling.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, that was a little distorted for a while when I became unbearable at the age of 17 and really wanted to get out.
But he survived.
He was very smart. Well, not very well. I must say, I would never like to go through what I put my parents through. Never. I would rather go childless than go through that. There's an age where a child, a sibling, an offspring, whatever you want to call them, turns around and sees his parents as people. And there's sort of the first shock of realizing that they are people and that they are fallible and that they do things wrong once in a while, which I didn't forgive them for, you know. And now I've come to the point, and did a couple of years ago, that I love my parents for being people, and they're friends of mine now, and I adore them. I really love them very much.
Candace, we could call you, I think rightfully, an intellectual girl. This would reflect that your home was an intellectual home.
No, I can't rightfully say that. What was very fortunate for me and for my brother now is that my parents have always provided us with the opportunities to study and to do whatever we liked. I was not spoiled materially. I mean, I had not as much as far as dresses and, you know, clothes and things that mean nothing as other people I grew up with. I mean, because the way children are raised in Beverly Hills, you couldn't even begin to fathom. But what I had was, I had horses because I loved animals, and I had dogs and I had cats, and I had every sport I wanted. And I had the best education that was available to me. And what more do you need? If you don't succeed by having this at your command, then you just don't succeed.
Candace, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking with Miss Candace Bergen in Paris. This is John Cannon for Monitor.
Candace Bergen, a young lady with definite opinions and an actress who's on her way. Now, that group of talented young ladies and gentlemen who accompany themselves on various instruments as they sing, or sing along with themselves as they play instruments, or something. The New Christy Minstrels.
Out on the beach we watched the sunset. Slowly while the sky turned red, we touched and then our lips met. It should have been beautiful. It should have been you.
It should have been you.
Quietly she whispered that she loved me. I so soft and blue, she said my name and she was lovely. It should have been beautiful. It should have been you.
You're where the weekend is always more interesting, informative, entertaining. In other words, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Crandall for Monitor, the best sound around for your weekend listening. Example, Jack Jones with his latest, It's Easy to Remember.
Your sweet expression, the smile you gave me, the way you looked when we met. It's easy to remember, but so hard to forget. I hear you whisper, I'll always love you. I know it's over, and yet... It's easy to remember, but so hard to forget. So I must dream to have your hand caress me, fingers press me tight. I'd rather dream than have that lonely feeling stealing through the night. Each little moment is clear before me, although it brings me regret. It's easy to remember, and so hard to forget. your hand caress me, fingers press me tight. I'd rather dream than have that lonely feeling stealing through the night. Each little moment is clear before me, although it brings me regrets. It's easy to remember and so hard to forget. It's easy to remember and so hard to forget. It's easy to remember and so hard to forget.
Now at the Monitor Sports Desk, Mel Allen with Today in Sports, plus a look at the week ahead.
Thank you very much, Brad. Hello there, everybody. The Chicago Blackhawks routed Toronto 5-0 to virtually clinch their first regular season National Hockey League championship. They cannot lose, but can make it official tonight if second-place New York ties or loses to Montreal. Kenny Hodge and Lou Angiotti each scored twice, Bobby Hull once for the Blackhawks, who, by the way, got an early start in celebrating with a champagne victory party in their dressing room. In the National Basketball Association, three games this afternoon. Philadelphia beat the New York Knicks 131-120, Boston beat Baltimore 123-118, and St. Louis nipped Cincinnati 120-119. In golf, Julius Burris, a 47-year-old father of seven, apparently has found the fountain of youth. Burris won his second tournament of the year today and the top prize of $23,000 in the $115,000 Florida Citrus Open in Orlando, won it by a stroke over Arnie Palmer and Canadian George Knudsen. In a three-way tie for the lead at the start of the day with Palmer and Knudsen, Burris came home with a 70 for a 10-under par 274. Palmer shot a 68, Knudsen a 66 for their 275s. Burris hasn't won a tournament in 3 years, but he clicked at Phoenix last month. He won today, so hang in there, Julius. In skiing, Francis Jean-Claude Keeley won the men's slalom and combined titles today in the North American Alpine Championships at Cannon Mountain, Franconia, New Hampshire. Second in the slalom, only 0.07 of a second behind the Frenchman, was America's Jimmy Huga. Herbert Huber of Austria was third. In the women's slalom, a French sweep of the first three places, Marielle Guachel, the winner, trailed by Isabelle Meir and Annie Famoz. Exhibition baseball results. Baltimore beat the New York Yankees 7-2, Washington 4, Houston 3 in 10 innings, Detroit 10, Minnesota 3, Chicago White Sox 8, Cincinnati 5, the Los Angeles Dodgers 2, San Francisco 7, Cleveland 4. Speaking of Cleveland, pitcher Sam McDowell was left behind in Tucson when the Indians traveled to Phoenix to play the Giants. Sam was mulling over a team fine, believed to be as high as $500, after being booked Wednesday night on a charge of being intoxicated. McDowell was contrite, though, said he couldn't really blame his manager and former roommate Joe Adcock for finding him. Said that in the future, he'd jump when Adcock said jump. Looking ahead, tomorrow, the South African Tennis Championships and Thoroughbred Racing returns to New York when Aqueduct opens a 234-day season. Tuesday, pro football's first combined draft in New York, the Tampa Professional Bowlers Association Tournament, the National AAU Women's Basketball Championships at Gallup, New Mexico, and National Basketball Association players must decide whether they'll accept pension terms or else the playoffs will be canceled. Thursday, the NCAA Ice Hockey Championships at Syracuse. The $100,000 Jacksonville Open Golfing Championships at Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. Saturday, the NCAA Basketball Tournament Regional Finals. The NIT Championship Games at Madison Square Garden. The World Amateur Ice Hockey Championships in Vienna. The Eastern Ski Championships at Glen Ellyn, Vermont. The National Junior AAU Track and Field Championships at Princeton, the Louisiana Derby at the Fairgrounds, and the Canadian Turf Handicap at Gulfstream. And next Sunday, the New York Boxing Writers Awards and the East Coast Open Karate Championships in New York. And so that's what is and will be in sports, Brad. Mel Allen here, friends, reminding you that for more features and news from the world of sports, stay tuned to Monitor.
Now, Monitor Music by Dean Martin's Little Girl Gail. The song, And We Were Lovers.
Smiling as if I could forget, and we were lovers the moment that we met. To regret.
Listening reminder, starting next week, noted psychologist Dr. Joyce Brothers will be added to the regular lineup of Monitor Talent. Be sure to listen. At the piano with Wednesday's Child. You're listening to Monitor, your front row seat for all the weekend acts at home or in your car anywhere in the USA. In Columbia, South Carolina, we're heard on station WIS. Right now, time to step aside for a word from all our NBC stations, and then, surprise, more of Monitor 67.
This is Monitor, your information center on the NBC Radio Network.
Africa, addio, addio, addio. The most brutal and beautiful motion picture you'll ever see. The Saturday Review says, Africa, addio is a real blast. Glorious, grisly, goofy. Anyone who fails to see it will miss one of the genuinely superior films in motion picture history. The explosive birth of a continent that shook the world. Africa, addio, addio. Technoscope and Technicolor.
Starts today at 4 on 47th and 34th Street East Theaters.
In the instrumental vein now, which is right near the jugular, here's Lawrence Welk and the orchestra, Born Free.
Thank you.
Crandall here for Monitor 67, the sound of the weekend world. In 2 minutes, an interview with the man who built a custom-designed body for Frank Sinatra's car. But first, Monitor music. From Claudine Langer in private life, Mrs. Andy Williams. And now, Monitor pays a visit to an unusual establishment, a shop that specializes in making custom bodies for the cars of movie stars and show business people in and around Hollywood. Reporter Rick Lazar was taken on a guided tour of the shop, known as Custom City, by its head, George Barris.
George, I see a beautiful black car way in the back. Do you think we could run over there and talk about this as we move along here at your place? Now, who owns this big black beauty over here?
Well, this car here is owned by Frank Sinatra. We have just installed all black glass. This is a special glass that you can see out of very clearly, but you can't see in.
I see.
And then the body has the latest rectangular headlights imported from France, English Scottish grain leather, and of course the traditional black and orange colors that Sinatra uses.
Well, tell me, when Sinatra comes in here, he expects all kind of goodies from you, right?
Well, Mr. Sinatra's a very safety-oriented person.
Isn't that right?
He keeps up on the latest electronic lights and gadgets that's used in aircraft, and he equips the same on his vehicles.
You mean Frank Sinatra's car here has, you've installed all types of things for aircraft. Why aircraft?
Well, he's very much an enthusiast on aircraft, and he loves to listen to the aircraft calls in his car. Also, he has the double safety belts, the lap belt and the shoulder belts, which keeps him completely intact in the vehicle. When you have low pressure, low fuel, and all these different things happening to the car, you can tell by different lighting systems.
Well, can I ask you a personal question? How much does it cost Frank Sinatra to come into your place of business here at Custom City and have his car completely renovated to, your way of thinking?
Well, the prices vary. They go anywhere from $10,000 on up to $50,000. It's just hard to say when they will stop.
Well, I won't put you on the spot with Frank Sinatra's car because that is truly one of the most beautiful cars I've ever seen. Now, let's walk into the shop here. By the way, Monitor is talking to George Barris, king of the customizers who makes special cars for the movie stars, movies, and TV. Now, what is this particular... We're in the workshop now. That's the noise in the background. George, what does this particular car do?
This car here we're just completing for Alvin the Chipmunk.
It's kind of a... It looks like a chipmunky car, but beautiful.
Well, of course, the first thing everybody says, well, what do you mean, Alvin? He's a cartoon character.
Uh-huh.
See, we're creating images for the youth that retain safety.
I see.
We do this with a car. For short, this car is called Alvin's Safety Car. It has double roll bars. It has a safety frame, safety suspension, a collapsible steering wheel, safety padded dash.
So in other words,
You're trying to get over to the younger crowd what safety really is.
Right.
Now, I know that most of our monitor audience listening in to our special guest, George Barris, would like to... There you go. Special cars and horns and everything. George, here's the car that I think is world famous now. And this, of course, is a car that you've created and made famous the world over called the Batmobile for Batman. What does this car cost?
The insurance policy on this car is $1 million.
What does the Batmobile do?
Well, actually, Batman, being a crime fighter, has many innovations, such as rocket tubes and safety packages and anti-theft control and emergency bat lever turners, high-powered big performance engines that will turn at speeds and things like that.
Well, George, I can't thank you enough. This is really like looking into the land of the future, and I would like to thank you very much for being on our monitor program.
It's our big privilege, of course.
A look at a shop that makes custom bodies for the star's automobiles, including Frank Sinatra's, the world's biggest compact car. And now, let's hear from Mr. Sinatra himself, joining forces with daughter Nancy. The name of the song? Oh, something stupid.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. I practice every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come true. But then I think I'll wait until, and then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. Your perfume fills my head, the stars get red, and oh, the night's so blue. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you.
This is Monitor, and the time, 16 minutes before the hour. Ahead, Sergio Mendez, Marilyn May, and Joe Garagiola at the sports desk. So stay right with us. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Brad Crandall for Monitor, where you keep in touch with what's going on this weekend and every weekend. And 3 minutes ahead, an interview with playwright Robert Anderson, soon to be represented on Broadway with a new work bearing the improbable title of You Know I Can't Hear You When the Water's Running. First, Sergio Mendez and Brasilia 66 with something for you. Title, For Me.
Hey, there's a hum in the air. Hey, 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 hear the stars on the spin. Hey, something saying out there. Hey, something's gonna begin. Something rare and wonderful.
Now, here's Monitor's man on the aisle, Leonard Probst, with a look at the work of playwright Robert Anderson and an interview with the gentleman himself.
Despite all the plays that open and close on Broadway every season, there are only a few American playwrights who are well known. The names that come to mind are Edward Albee, Arthur Miller, Tennessee Williams, and William Inge. And then some people add the name Robert Anderson. Robert Anderson has written a number of plays. His most memorable was Tea and Sympathy, but that opened 17 years ago. Tea and Sympathy ran 720 performances, and then Mr. Anderson wrote the movie version. Since then, Robert Anderson has written many movies, including The Sand Pebbles, which is one of the five nominated for an Academy Award next month in Hollywood. Tomorrow night, Robert Anderson comes back to Broadway. But now, Mr. Anderson is 50 years old, and he's trying something new, his first comedy. Anderson has a reputation as a realistic dramatist, a playwright out of the old school, a writer who knows how to construct a play so everybody understands what's happening and why. His new play indicates he's attempting a new form. It is four short, one-act plays under a tent title that doesn't sound at all like the old Robert Anderson. The title is, You Know I Can't Hear You When the Water's Running. The four playlets are linked together by the same theme, which is married life. I asked Robert Anderson to explain that title.
I think it comes from every home. Seems to me everybody I've mentioned the title to starts to laugh and says, I invented the phrase.
Isn't this the first time that Robert Anderson has tried to be amusing for an entire evening?
Yes, I think it is. Actually, one of the plays is quite serious. The others range from farce to farce comedy, and yes, I think it is the first time. I think it's quite a different Robert Anderson.
Mr. Anderson, as a playwright, do you think you can say more through comedy than you can through a straight play?
I don't know. I'm not really, of course, trying to say too much. Someone once said it's all right to have a theme in your play, but don't let any of the actors know what the theme is. I hope my themes come out like the aftertaste of wine, you know, that you get it, but you're not quite sure of it.
A number of playgoers, some people even have written in the Monitor, and other people have said that they object to the type of serious play, the Harold Pinter play, The Homecoming, the Edward Albee play, A Delicate Balance, because they feel that the people on stage are no longer identifiable, realistic, that they're symbolic and, in a sense, annoying and irritating and have no validity. Do you find that this is true of the kind of drama we're getting today?
I can identify sometimes, and of course sometimes they don't want you to identify, or sometimes you identify when you get home at night. I saw a play the other day at Yale, at the Yale Drama School, and the playwright had to, at the same time, create a new language and then communicate something in it all in one evening. It's a little bit like Shakespeare. I don't know, if you haven't seen Shakespeare in a long time, and you suddenly go, the first act is always almost meaningless to me. But by the second and third act, I'm all swept up in it because I've learned, I've shifted gears, and I'm attuned to it and so on. I think, to a certain extent, there is a validity in this. I think that the new forms are very exciting.
Well, let's stop there a minute. What are the new forms in the theater?
Well, there's a freedom from convention. Whereas you used to have the Ibsen, the Chekhovian form for many years was with our theater, now you can do almost anything on stage and the audience will follow you. In other words, you don't have to plant and pay off and plant and so on. They will follow you. If you say, this is the Forest of Arden, it is the Forest of Arden. If you say, suddenly we're going to skip and we're going to jump someplace, they go with you.
Well, is the theater becoming more outrageous and exploring more unusual avenues of sexual relationships?
I hope it is. Yes, I hope it is. I would like it to be outrageous in a meaningful way. I think that one of our problems has been in the theater is that it's been outrageous simply to be outrageous. And I find this kind of pointless, although it has the ground for us. Now it is up for the meaningful playwright to take this liberation that has sort of been handed us and use it, in a meaningful way. I think that our theater has become for too long a monument at which we come and lay a wreath of respect. And I would love to get a theater that's spontaneous, that's fresh, that's fun. I'd like to get the young people into the theater.
But what about realistic drama? People, sometimes theatergoers who are faithful theatergoers go, let's say, six or seven times a season, say, where can I find serious, realistic drama? It's now taken these terrible, ugly forms, symbolic forms, and they feel disenchanted and giving up on the theater. The theater is no longer central to our existence. Aren't you a man who is known for realistic drama?
Yes, I am. And it's interesting to me, I think, that some of these plays, oh, they're all realistic. There's nothing avant-garde or way out about any of these plays. Each one is quite realistic, I think. Bob Sherwood used to have a wonderful statement. I was a member of the Playwrights Company with him, and he was a dear friend. And he'd say that the drama travels in the caboose. of art. And I think that drama is now coming upon what all the other arts have discovered a long time ago. Abstract art, first in painting, then the novel lost its shape and form, in a sense, and became something else. And now the drama is finally doing this.
How does the audience know when it's seeing some significant or valuable or lasting new form in art, as opposed to something which is just without any validity or enjoyment?
Well, I think, of course, that it's purely, existential is the word. I think if you feel it, you feel it. If you don't feel it, you don't. And I think that an audience, if it doesn't enjoy a play, has a perfect right to say, I simply don't enjoy it. Maybe I'll catch up to it, or it'll catch up to me. But I think the honesty of response is what's important, and I think at the moment we have a lot of phony response.
Playwright Robert Anderson, assessing the theater and waiting for the response he gets when his comedy, You Know I Can't Hear You When the Water's Running, opens tomorrow night. This is Leonard Probst, NBC News, New York. That's it from Broadway.
New one by Marilyn May, Try to Remember. Now, a message meant for you.
Put more sparkle in your life today with sparkling champagne. Get with living the exciting way. Drink sparkling champagne.
Champagne is the most exciting drink to make the scene in years. Like nothing else you ever tasted except champagne. Buy Champale wherever beer is sold. Cost just pennies more. That's C-H-A-M-P-A-L-E. Sparkling Champale Malt Liquor. Metropolis Brewery, Trenton, New Jersey. Now, monitor music with the sound of sunny Italy, which almost rhymes with the title Titoli. You're covering the weekend scene with Monitor. I'm your host, Brad Crandall.
See you too. The latest news now is on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from everywhere. From NBC.
Africa, adio, adio. Searing, shocking. The birth of a continent. The death of an era. Africa Today. no newspaper, no TV, no camera has dared to reveal the unbelievable truth. Until now. Unimaginable beauty and unspeakable brutality. A new continent rising out of the smoldering embers of the old. What you'll see, you'll never forget. Africa, addio. Technoscope and Technicolor.
Started today at Forum 47th and 34th Street East Theaters. Wetson's for people who like delicious food. Yes, at Wetson's, you're sure to enjoy those palate-pleasing hamburgers, golden brown French fries, and Wetson's thick shakes. In Levittown, Long Island, Wetson's is located at 3946 Hempstead Turnpike. For the Wetson's nearest you, check the phone book.
On today's battlefield, firepower can spell the difference between victory and defeat. On today's job front, employment can spell the difference between independence and insecurity. Disabled veterans need your help, and you need theirs. Call your state employment service and hire a disabled veteran. He'll produce for you.
The big voice of Big Town, WNBC, New York.